Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Tananarive Due is an award-winning author. Her debut novel is called The Between. It tells the haunting story of Hilton James, who survives an accident as a boy, only to wonder if he should have. He spends his days battling the blurring line between fantasy and reality. When Tananarive was working as a journalist for the Miami Herald, she interviewed famed vampire author Anne Rice. Anne shared with Tananarive that the horror genre opens the doors to discussing big themes in ways other fiction can't. So Tananarive wrote The Between for herself. It reflects the black suburban upbringing and fears she had lived with and stands as a pioneering piece in the growing subgenre of black horror. The Between was originally published in 1995 and has recently been reissued. It's a testament to Tananarive's writing style and her vivid imagination that The Between reads like it was just published. She now teaches at UCLA about black horror, which was mainstreamed by Jordan Peele's masterpiece, Get Out. She joins us to talk about her debut and the black horror movement and how she fell in love with horror in the first place.
You know, in some ways I had no choice but to become interested in horror because my late mother, who was a civil rights activist named Patricia Stevens Due, really, really loved horror. I mean, she loved it. When she was babysitting for our three-year-old back a long time ago, he came home talking about demons. And I was like, what in the world are you talking about? And then I realized, oh, grandma. Because she had been watching like age-inappropriate television in front of my son. But that was sort of my childhood. You know, I grew up watching those creature features, those old Universal horror movies. She loved them. I loved them. She gave me my first Stephen King novel at the age of 16, and that really clutched it in terms of my love for horror. But yeah, I think we loved it for slightly different reasons. I think she loved horror as a way to leech away trauma, racial trauma, state violence. She had been subjected to tear gas as an activist, as a very young woman, and wore dark glasses the whole time I knew her. Up until she died, she wore dark glasses 80% of the time, even indoors, because her eyes were sensitive to light. And I never had the chance to discuss this with her. But I think her love of horror stemmed from that, because the monsters in her world were very real, visceral monsters. And I was raised more gently than that. I've never been subjected to violence in my life. So it was a different, as a kid for me, it was like a roller coaster ride. It's only now as I get older that I can see how horror helps me feel better prepared for hardship and tragedy and process. The biggest horror of my life was the loss of my mother.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to hear about your mother, all the trauma she went through.
Oh, thank you.
How did you come up with the idea for The Between?
Well, I'd been writing a bunch of short stories, trying to hone my craft the way I still teach students, you know, start short, publish a few times, you know, use those publications to build up your name, find representation. The problem was I hadn't really published anything. And the one story I sold, the magazine went out of business before they could publish it. So I very much considered myself a newbie writer, an unpublished writer. Then Hurricane Andrew happened in 1992. And I got an idea. And for context, Hurricane Andrew was a wind storm primarily, so it just knocked everything down. So for mile after mile after mile, my hometown of Miami, where I grew up, was almost unrecognizable, especially where my parents lived, where my grandmother lived, my aunt lived. It was the most horrific experience. So that was sort of the idea of the alternate reality. What if you wake up in a world that's very different from the one you went to sleep in? And I embraced a black protagonist because I had started writing, you know, white male characters primarily. And so The Between was, let me write what you know, like what people say. And it was a black family in the suburbs. I had never read that book before. And it was like, and I wrote my sister a letter saying, do you think there would be a market for a black horror novel? I was very tentative, but the story felt so alive in my imagination that I gave myself an artificial deadline, which was a screenwriting contest. Oddly, it's not a screenplay, but they were accepting novels. And I just randomly said, okay, that'll be my deadline. I was working for the Miami Herald at the time. I would get up early and write. I would stay up late writing, sometimes scaring myself because, you know, the book has a lot of nightmares and dream sequences and it's very preoccupied with death, as was I. So, you know, I was scaring myself. But that was the idea, just this, the idea that of waking up between different realities. And also, obviously, there must have been some sort of way I wanted to address an African-American experience in the story, not just because the characters were Black, but because the antagonist is taking the form of a white supremacist. And even though I don't think it was entirely conscious, there must have been, I think, something about the state of being in alternate realities that spoke to a Black American experience in my mind.
Yeah, and I think that's why your book is so powerful. Your protagonist, Hilton James, is caught between the real world and the dream world. He's a very likable character, especially at the beginning, but you really put him through hell, which kind of changes his character. Was that difficult for you to do?
You know, I always say I wouldn't want to be a character in one of my books.
Yeah, I can see why.
If I woke up and I was a character in one of my books, I would be like, oh no.
Because, yeah, exactly.
Yes, I do put my characters through hell. And is it hard? On one level, I guess it is hard. But on another level, I'm putting them through these hardships so that I can teach myself how to react and stand up in the face of hardship. Now, Hilton doesn't do, you know, everything I would probably ideally do in real life. There's some pretty wild things he does while he's trying to figure out what's going on with him. Is he schizophrenic? I mean, are these dreams real? He's very confused about what's happening. But primarily, Hilton existed so that, you know, when my storms came and I knew they wouldn't be his storms, they would look different, that I would have some kind of a model in ultimately courage, because Hilton never gives up. And ultimately he feels triumphant by the end of the book. And that's what you want, you know, in the face of things you can't change. How do you gain a sense of triumph over death?
Mm-hmm, definitely. You're one of the pioneers of this movement, which applies to fiction, literature, and also to film, this idea of Black horror. How do you define Black horror?
That is a fantastic question. And I teach a class in Black horror at UCLA called The Sunken Place, Racism, Survival, and the Black Horror Aesthetic. And the way I teach it is very broadly, right? So the between is an example of what you might call racism as the monster. That's not technically true. Death is the actual monster, but death is presenting a face of a white supremacist as the monster. But not all Black horror has to be, and people know that from, say, a movie like Get Out by Jordan Peele, where racism is also the monster. But that is not all that Black horror is, either in my work or Peele's work or any of the other Black horror writers out there. Black horror to me is horror that has a Black protagonist with agency in the story, someone you would recognize as making decisions, you know, rather than being just a trope, which is what you find in a lot of, say, cinematic horror, where Black characters were relegated to these very tropey roles as just the sacrificial Negro, we call it, the spiritual guide, the magical Negro. It's moving beyond tropes to show Black characters in their full humanity. And within that, it can be facing racism as the monster, facing the monster within, or any other theme that you would find in traditional horror that does not have Black characters. Black horror is anything the Black creators can imagine. And I know that's a very broad theme, but the reason it's important is because people like my mother, for example, watching the horror of the 1940s and 1950s and 1960s, you had to empathize with characters who were nothing like you. The white male is the protagonist, and you could feel for him and cry for him and scream for him, but you never saw yourself reflected. So Black horror is the way Black artists reflect themselves within the horror genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. As you mentioned, you teach a course at UCLA, and it focuses heavily on Jordan Peele's Get Out. Can you tell us a bit about the class?
Absolutely. You know, I was teaching something called Afrofuturism at UCLA, which is even broad. It's like it's science fiction, fantasy, and horror. And there weren't a lot of examples in cinema for science fiction or horror except short films when I first started. And this was only about 5 years ago, but it was just pre-Black Panther, pre-Get Out. And when I saw the trailer for Get Out and saw the film, I was like, oh, this is a great linchpin to teach a course about the history of Black horror. So yes, it is front-loaded with Jordan Peele. And, you know, my students had to read W.E.B. Du Bois, The Comet, which was a short story in 1920. A lot of people didn't even know Du Bois, who's a social activist, journalist, anti-lynching advocate, didn't even know he wrote fiction, right? But he wrote a horror story where the only survivors were a Black man and a white woman, which is sort of lending context to how powerful that pairing is in our history. Like, it's the impetus behind the violence and lynching and Birth of a Nation, a Black man chasing a white woman through the woods, like he's a bear, basically. Mm-hmm. And so much of lynching is around that dynamic of Black masculinity as the so-called threat against white women. And so we lead it with Get Out, but it really is looking at a lot of also creators who came before Get Out, who were making Black horror, you know, 1940, Son of Angagi, you know, mm-hmm. came out. And in the 1990s, especially, there was a renaissance in Black horror with Rusty Cundiff, Tales from the Hood, and Eve's Bayou by Casey Lemons. But a lot of these directors just could not get second chances, so it kind of disappeared for a while. And now, with the advent of Get Out, Black horror is a recognized subgenre. I kind of almost chuckle when I hear people say the phrase, because it's so new to hear people talking about it, even though it has been around for a while.
Yeah. You actually had Jordan Peele attend one of your classes as a surprise guest. How did that go?
Oh, my gosh. Jordan Peele has come to my class probably 3 times.
Oh, really?
Okay. Live, yeah. And the way it all happened was I was just blabbing, as I do on Twitter, about how I was going to be teaching a Black horror class at UCLA called The Sunken Place. And a reporter said, "Where's your syllabus?" And I had not even written my syllabus yet. So it was probably like a month and a half later that I was able to give him a syllabus and do an interview. And the day the interview came out, Monkey Paw Productions, which is Jordan Peele's company, followed me on Twitter. And I was already following them. So, you know, the way it works on Twitter is if you're mutual followers, you can send private messages.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just at the age where I'm like, what the heck? I was like, let me just send a message and say, wow, it would really be great if Jordan Peele could come talk to my class. I had to do it. Just had to. Mm-hmm. But then within 2 hours, I was hearing from Jordan Peele himself saying, ha ha, I could surprise them. And I think it was like 2 weeks later, we set it up so that I distracted my students showing a clip from Get Out. For people who've seen it, it's the scene where Rose is shaking the car keys.
Where are those keys, Rose?
You know I can't give you the keys, right, babe?
And my class was captivated, talking to the screen, mad. We snuck Jordan Peele into the very back row. And then as we had rehearsed, or at least discussed, I'll say we discussed it, it's kind of a little sketch. I'll say I did a little sketch with Jordan Peele. Oh, cool. I turned up the lights and I said, okay, what do you think the director is trying to say about the coveting of Black bodies? Jordan Peele raised his hand and stood up and said, I have a question. And then he started walking slowly to the front of the class. And his realization grew. Let me tell you, that class went wild.
More people.
Yeah, the class has grown. We have more than we did last time.
Excellent. How y'all doing?
Good. Yeah.
Thanks for coming to school today.
Not because, oh, it's Jordan Peele, he's a celebrity, or I know him from Key and Peele, but because we had done so much preparatory work up to the screening of Get Out that they just had so much respect for him as an artist, that they were completely overwhelmed by his, and he answered questions the entire class, and he's come in twice subsequently when I was teaching in person. Right now I'm virtual, and every single time he came, I learned something new, a different take, more insight. He's just so creative and intelligent. The students love his visits.
Mm-hmm, I'll bet they do. Jordan Peele has said that he really made Get Out for Black audiences. So I'm curious, who did you write The Between for?
Well, I was unpublished at the time, so I wrote it for me.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, but you must have, in the back of your mind, or maybe somewhere in the middle of your cerebral cortex, you must have had an ideal reader in mind, didn't you?
You know, I continue to be my avatar in terms of who I'm writing for. Mm-hmm. But once I overcame my own invisibility in my work, like where I was writing short epiphany stories with no genre and no blackness, you know, that was how I was trying to become a writer. That's what a writer mm-hmm. looked and felt like in the books I was reading. Once I realized I had the freedom to just write myself and write what I wanted to write, I didn't wrestle with that question anymore about who my audience was. I mean, ever since that point, my main protagonists are Black. Yes, I do have white characters in all of my books, but my main protagonists are Black. And I'm writing, yes, for Black readers primarily, even though some of them may not like horror. I know when I first came out in the 90s, a lot of people were telling me, I don't usually read horror, but that kind of thing. But ultimately, though, of course you want your books to have universal appeal. I'm a big believer in finding the universal through the specific. Mm. I think the specific social, political, family histories of African Americans, even if racism isn't the monster, can inform the story in a way that will just feel different. So a horror reader who's read like a whole bunch of traditional Eurocentric horror can pick up a Black horror novel and find a new way to be scared, which I think is ultimately what horror readers really like. They want to be scared.
Yeah.
They want novelty. And by very definition, you can't be scared by that which you've experienced 100 times already the same way.
Very well said. Tanana Reeve Du, thank you for joining us. It was such a pleasure and honor to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Thank you very much for those questions.
Tanana Reeve Du is the author of The Between and many other novels and short stories. You can find out more about Tanana Reeve and her work at wpr.org/beta.
He was invited to go over and make a film, which he did in 1970. He made Watermelon Man, which is about a white guy who one day wakes up and realizes he's Black.
Author Ian Hayden Smith joins us to talk about Melvin Van Peebles and Gordon Parks in another edition of Cult Filmmakers. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.